Welcome to the J-Pod, where everyone has a story.
We always talk about stepping out of our comfort zone, but nobody's really prepared to do it. That's what I did. I stepped completely out, and I thought I'd made the biggest mistake 3 months in, and I didn't see the light at the end of the tunnel. And, you know, literally one night thinking, no one's coming to help me here. I'm going to have to figure this out for myself, and came up with a plan and, you know, started reading more and started doing online courses and stopped feeling sorry for myself.
The J-Pod, brought to you by J-Man. 1-800-J-MAN. Inspiring people to live the life they choose.
Coach, back again with part two of my chat with NBL, NBA and Australian boomer Chris Anstey. Chris has been doing many things since he finished playing. But having said that, I asked him if being a basketballer is still an important part of his life.
Yeah, it is. It'll always be a part of what I do. And it's, you know, it's athletes and it's corporate. You know, there are great parallels and synergies between sport and business. But, you know, in sport, I enjoy working with younger athletes that we can still influence habit and behaviour. You know, that sort of 16, 17 through to early 20s age group where, you know, they're mature enough to make their own decisions. They're old enough to understand consequence and we can challenge them. And with corporates, it's the same thing. It's opening their eyes to what's possible. And I think, you know, part of what my coaching philosophy in both revolves around is that too many people are too scared to understand what their own personal best looks like. They're not willing to get, and there's that word again, uncomfortable. And we compare ourselves to others far too often. And if we're not the best at something or one of the best few, we shy away from it. But yeah, you know, the minute we stop comparing ourselves to others and compare ourselves to a previous version of us, the better we'll become, the more enjoyment we'll find in what we do, and the better people we'll find will gravitate to and will gravitate towards us. So, yeah, that will always be a part of me because I think that's one of the biggest things sport taught me over the years is what it takes to achieve your personal best or my personal best and then hopefully to share that with teammates and then with players as I coached. And you know, I've been fortunate to understand what success looks like, but how hard it is to achieve. And the thing is, it is achievable, but no one hands it to you. You've actually got to go and get it.
How quickly do you get over that uncomfortability, if there's such a word? Because I know sometimes with me, even at my age, I still feel like deep down, I need to impress at times. It's like, just get through it, get through it, get through it. And I'm thinking, when is this going to start to be fun? Because, and then I walk away thinking, oh, I should have done that right. I should have done this. Do you still have those feelings?
Yeah, of course. And it's when it's around other people, again, I've stopped trying to convince people I know what I'm doing. And, you know, another great word, again, that people know the word, but they don't understand the meaning of it often is vulnerability. Mm. And it's actually allowing yourself to be vulnerable. We don't have to be the best in the room or the smartest in the room. You know, shut up and listen and try to understand what someone's teaching you. And if you need help, ask for it. I mean, that's everything you hear with mental health is if you need help, ask for it. And I think that's the same in a work environment. Well, so many people try to prove that they know what they're doing because they see asking for help as a sign of weakness, even in their jobs. But I'm more than happy to be terrible at a lot of things, but I know I'll get better at it. And I think I'm really comfortable knowing that I can get better at a lot of things when I put my mind to them. And it's funny, when COVID started, I started writing and I put something online, but it was funny. I wrote this story about, I used to play tennis with Dustin Fletcher. So I wrote this story. I wanted to write a story about pathways and that I didn't believe there's such thing because you can find success or get to the same destination a million different ways. And, you know, I wrote this story and I was really proud of it. And then I showed it to a few mates and they ripped it to shreds and I asked them to. It was terrible. And so I rewrote it. And then I put it online. Sorry, before I put it online, I read it again a couple of days later and I thought, it's horrible. And so I did it again. And so I ended up writing this story about four times and I posted it. And a lot of people read it and engaged with it and connected with it, which was great. But even when I then went back months later to repost it because I thought it was relevant, I found it wasn't very good again. I could do it better. And I think so many people, and the analogy I drew from that was so many people would have written it for the first time, posted and said, that's good enough for me. Mm. I'm just always looking to do things better. And I think that's a really, that's a quality I've learnt in sport. And I know when I coach or when I've been in leadership positions in the corporate world, that's the sort of quality I'm looking for in people that look you in the eye, they're keen to improve, they're keen to learn, because I can teach you a skill, but I can't teach you a personality if you're full of shit. So this writing thing sort of took off, and I never wanted to write a book because I don't like it being about me. But the way I've ended up doing it is I'm actually writing about these incredible people who've and what they've taught me over the years. So in my mind, the book's not about me. It's about what I'm thankful for, you know, the people who have impacted my career and my life, and, you know, the actual lessons that I've learned from, and then perhaps how we can actually all, you know, apply them into our own lives. And so it's been a lot of fun. It's been rewarding. And but I was uncomfortable with anything when I started. I'm not a writer. And it's taken hours and hours and hours, but I'm a better writer now than what I was 6 months ago.
Now, I don't expect a chapter in the book about the coach, but I hope there's at least one or two lines.
The word coach does get mentioned a lot.
You mentioned mental health. Have you had your demons at times?
Well, yeah. And it's interesting because as an athlete, the throwaway line is talk about overcoming adversity. It's a question everyone asks. And 9 out of 10 athletes will talk about injury. But, you know, the separation of our inverted commas real life from our professional life, it doesn't really exist. So, I mean, getting divorced is, you know, I was sleeping in my car, I was sleeping in different mates' places the year we won our second championship with the Tigers. And, you know, because I was captain, even then I didn't want to tell the guys about it because I thought it would be considered a sign of weakness. And again, that's a lot of years ago now. But I'll never forget the day. Again, I've got to do something about this. And so I was driving home. The last place I'd wanted to be was training. I'd hated being there that day. And I'm a Western Bulldogs fan. And I was trying to think of someone who might be able to relate to what I was going through, someone who always seemed to have distractions and things going on in their outside world but still managed to perform in their chosen endeavour. And I picked up the phone and I called the Western Bulldogs Footy Club and I left my number for Jason Akimanis. Because regardless of what you think about him, he's always seemed to have something going on, but he's an incredible football player. And I wanted to know how we could separate that, you know, from and not allow it to affect his performance. But, you know, before I got home that day, my phone rang and it was Aki said, "You're free now, we'll get a coffee." And I reckon I caught up with him a half dozen times and they were incredible. You know, some of the things we spoke about, you know, again, separating personal from private, finding new things to try that will engage me, a training that I've never done before, so trying new things. But just about as much as anything, how it's a really positive thing to embrace being different. I think a lot of people want to be the same. They don't want to stand out, but how standing out can be a positive thing and how being different can be a positive thing and all these types of things. And I was really proud of that year. For getting through it for a start, but yeah, and then finding the way to then perform at a pretty good level. So I think, you know, as athletes, I still think that the biggest challenges we go through as athletes have nothing to do with what happens on us on the sporting field. It happens with what goes on in our family and what breaking up of relationships, loss of life, all these. I think everyone has to go through it. Otherwise, you're probably not deep enough in a relationship and haven't let yourself become connected to something enough that you care. So, yeah, it has been tough. But at the same time, every time you go through something hard, it becomes easier and easier to talk about it.
I've known Chris Anstey for many years, and I'm just now finding out things about him that surprise me. I'm sure you are too. Back talking to Chris after this quick break, where he speaks about mental illness and how he's learned to listen.
J-Man inspires and supports NDIS participants to live their best lives and promotes experiences for people with a disability. The NDIS can be confusing. So if you're thinking about applying for funding or not sure how your plan actually works, J-Man can help and guide you through every step of the process at no cost to you. jman.com.au. That's jaeman.com.au. Now is the time to get the most out of your NDIS. Call us for a free consultation. 1-800-J-MAN.
Back speaking with Chris Anstey on the J-Pod, we pick up our chat where we're talking about understanding mental illness. Do you find, because you've been through the ups and downs, and at times you think about mental health, and mental health at the moment, thank heavens, has finally been spoken about in open terms, do you find that you understand it better, and you understand other people that are going through it? Because that the biggest roadblock is, and I'm not saying this in a derogatory term to people who don't understand mental illness, the biggest roadblock is ignorance.
Yeah, look, I never profess to know anything. What I see coaching as, and what I see sharing of stories of past experience as, is exactly that. It's conversation, it's suggestions, it's ideas. There's no right answer that suits everybody. But I think one of it's amazing the harder times that I've had, and I think most people who have the courage to then speak out, what they'll learn is that the minute they start speaking, they realise how many other people are going through it as well. Miscarriages, deaths, disease, whatever it might be, they're horrible things. But the minute we let people in and let them know that it's affecting us, it's amazing how many people connect with you who are going through the same thing, and I think you get strength in that. So, again, I don't have the answers, but what I do understand a lot better now is that I don't know what people are going through, so I've got to listen better. I wasn't a great listener early in my life. I used to try to prove that I knew things by speaking and interjecting, but, I'm fascinated by the quiet person in the room now. I'm fascinated as to what they're thinking, what they're observing, and I try to be that a lot more often.
And that's the theme running through these podcasts, be it you, be it a participant, as we call them, people involved in the NDIS. Everyone has a story, and every story in its own way is interesting. But I need to ask you, what's been your darkest moment?
I think, again, that first divorce, when I was being accused of doing things to the kids that were just wrong, and the court was trying to take the kids off me, and I felt like I was a horrible parent for leaving. I felt that people would believe what was getting said to the court, that an intervention order was something that I just couldn't fathom would ever be sent towards me, because I know how much I love my kids, and I know that I'd never do anything like that to anyone. But it's amazing what lawyers will suggest you do to gain more custody of your children.
And they say don't take it personally.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing I've always had a soft spot for is, there's a lot, and of course I understand how hard it is being a single mother, but I think it's a single parent. And dads do it pretty tough as well. And oftentimes dads get the hard end of the bargain when it comes to separation with seeing their own kids. And that's tricky. But at the same time, there are, dads out there who become distant and don't want as much to do. But I've always wanted to be around my kids. And, even with overseas job, there's no way I'd take anything if it meant leaving my kids while they're still children. That was it. I think when people telling untruths about you and everything that I knew was never say a bad word about anyone in front of the kids, but knowing that they were hearing it about me and it was influencing how they saw their own dad was hard. Probably having said that, when Izzy got old enough, she said something, we're at home one day and I said, "What? Who told you that?" And it was about me, about something that she'd been told had happened that never did. And we ended up sitting down literally all night till about 3 a.m. and just talking. And it was the best chat I've ever had with her. And I gave her the next morning off school. But, even from then I made a deal with her saying, "I'll speak to you like an adult now." Because I think we always speak to our own kids like they're a little bit younger than what they are, but speak to other people's kids like they're older. So the minute I started talking to Izzy more like an adult and letting her in, I just thought she was at the age where she was old enough to know some of the truth, and she needed to know that. And I needed to know what was being said about me to let her know whether it was true or not. And some of it was. And, I've never professed to be a great husband. I think I'm a pretty good dad. I've never professed to be a great husband, clearly. just those conversations with your own kids and even opening up to them is, it was a great thing for me. But leading up to that, when you know that your kids are being told things about you that are untrue, and you know that in your mind the worst thing I can do is say anything negative about their mum or their, you know, the old in-laws, it's tough. You got to suck it up and trust that the kids will one day be old enough to make their own mind up. And as it turns out, that's what they've done. And one of my happiest days was when Izzy actually came to me and said, why don't we live with you half the time? It's not fair. And she actually asked, can we live with you? And I said, no, I'd love you to live here half the time, but you're going to have to talk to your mum because other people have decided that you need to stay with her 9 days a fortnight. And so she went to Lindley and said, I want to live with Dad. And we had a chat, and credit to Lindley, if that's what Izzy wants, then sure. And, that was one of the nicer moments coming out of it, where Izzy was old enough to start making up her own mind and not just be fed stories that weren't quite true.
How difficult was it for you? And a natural instinct is to go, or to get angry and to want to fight back and to want to say things. How difficult was it for you not to do that?
I did a lot, but in and around people that I trusted and behind closed doors when the kids went around. I vented, I hit things, I yelled, I cried, but never around the kids. Some of the things I said about various people from past relationships, I needed to say because I needed to tell someone and tell them my side of the stories. And you figure out who your real mates are, the mates who do want to hear both sides of a separation. But, I'd have those conversations, but I was always really, really careful to make sure the kids weren't around. And, everyone reads books, and again, it's easier said than done, but, I was always conscious of not bringing that up around the kids and making sure that whenever they came over, they had the best possible experience that they could. And, I disciplined them like I would have if they were here all the time, and I didn't, I've only got them for 4 days, I'm going to let them run amok and do whatever they want. I never wanted to be that dad either. And I think that's something that separated families go through a lot, where they feel like a lot of dads I've spoken to, if I discipline my son or daughter, they'll just want to go back to their mum's house, and mum treats me better than dad. So even that disciplining my son and my daughter was hard, because there was always the danger of that, but I had to trust that I was doing the right things. Like coaching, you need to trust that you're doing the right thing, and you'll be evaluated however you're evaluated. But I'm not smart enough to remember lies. I'm not smart enough to make things up and remember. The best way I know to do it is to do what I feel is right, and hope that they figure it out eventually. If they don't, well, it sits a little bit more comfortably knowing that I did it with the right intent.
Chris Anstey with me on the J-Pod. After this 30-second break, Chris is back talking about his personal involvement with disability.
J-Man inspires and supports NDIS participants to live their best lives.
We do tap dancing together, which is a lot of fun. She's just so understanding of mental illness, and I feel like I can tell her anything and that she won't judge me.
Now is the time to get J-Man active.
Increase my self-esteem and self-worth, and has just made me feel so much better about myself.
jman.com.au. That's jaeman.com.au.
Coach, back again with our final segment with Chris Anstey. We pick up the conversation where Chris O talks about his personal involvement with disability. Now, you touched on the mental health side, the disability side. You've got somebody in your family.
Yeah, my little cousin Josh is Down syndrome. He's my youngest uncle's older son. And it's always interesting because, again, I mentioned nobody, I think, wants to be different. And people with disabilities, people with different skin colours, whatever it might be, people who are 7 foot tall, we stand out. It was one of those things, even as a family, where you do take offence to offhanded comments that aren't intended to hurt but do. So if somebody will describe something as being retarded or spastic or whatever, it's insulting to our family because, that's what Josh was getting described as. And he's a great kid. I mean, he's a great adult now. And the family, it is hard growing up with someone who demands so much of your attention as a family, as an immediate family, of course, but even as an extended family. And, he'll have his challenges still, and he's had his challenges growing up. But, I still think it comes back to trying. Everyone's always got some shit going on, and we don't oftentimes take the time to wonder what the other person's going through. We just want to get our own point of view across. But you know, the whole walking a mile in someone else's shoes, especially when it's as obvious as a disability, you know, visually obvious, it can be tough, and you do get your back up and you do get protective and all those sort of, and you do want to make a difference and you want to educate people who say that. So, you know, that's been one of the things even growing up. If I hear that, I'll tell people, I'm like, hey, And then you don't try to just yell at them and create conflict. You actually want to try to educate them. You know, not the right thing to say, but he's, for me, it's just Josh. It's like, it's funny, growing up in basketball, you know, the whole racial equality thing. Americans, Estonians, Russians, Spanish, South Americans, Indigenous, it's just them. I've had all of those teammates from all around the planet, and some of them I still consider my best friends. It's one of the absolute beauties of basketball and being a part of a global sport, is that from the minute you walk into it, it's global. The minute my kids started turning up to practice and understanding what was going on, they just saw Dad's teammates. They just saw people I went to work with. They didn't see anything else, and they know the person behind every single face that they've ever come across. I don't think it's insulting to call someone Sudanese. They should be proud of it. I don't think it's insulting to call someone Indigenous. I'm proud of it. It's the way you actually think of that person. I don't feel the need to call them something else because that's who they are. I'm Australian. I'm 7 foot tall. They're the facts. You know, you're 6 foot 10 and you're Sudanese. That's not a derogatory thing. They're just the facts.
Well, that's what I was... I'm glad you brought that up, because you must have copped heaps as a tall young man. What's the weather like up there? I mean, I'm sure you get that all the time.
All the time. I still get asked, if I'm out in public, 100 times a day, a comment about my height. And my son's 6 foot 10, and, you know, I got called into... You know, I heard he'd sworn at school, and I got called in, and I thought it was a little bit unlike Ethan. And I said, the principal said, Ethan, you know, what have you done? And he said, well... You know, I swore. What happened? And he said, well, the small group of kids were picking on him and, you know, making tall jokes as before a class. And, you know, they're in the classroom before the teacher got there. And finally, the last one was the old, what's the weather like up there? And I thought they were going to tell me he spat on him and said it was raining. But he looked up at the roof, and I don't want to swear on the podcast, but he looked back down and he goes, we're inside, you effing idiot. It's the same as what it is down there. And so he said it in front of the principal, and I laughed. I thought, that's good.
It's a good...
And then the principal, you can't... Hang on a second. Is the issue his reaction to being bullied or the bullies? I mean, we don't... You wouldn't have allowed that if the kid had a wheelchair or a disability or whatever it might be. And so it's funny because... Or even obesity, you know, and height is actually probably the last one where it's still, people still feel it okay to comment on your height, like I'm not, like I'm unaware that I'm tall. Oh, you're really tall. Thanks. No, really? 100 times a day. And, you know, just like we wouldn't mention a physical characteristic of anyone else, it's almost the last one. And it's funny because I wrote about it one time, and I've chatted about it, and people say, oh yeah, but you got your basketball career out of it. I said, sure, but I still worked hard. And I, you know, if I walk into a crowded room, you know, for years I used to walk around the edge so you don't walk through the middle and everyone goes, I can't be bothered. And so I've always told Ethan that, you know, by all means, stand up for yourself. Don't start something, but you stand up for yourself and I'll have you back, because I get it. And not many people get what he goes through, but I'm fortunate to be his old man and actually do understand, so it's something that we can talk about.
So what's the future hold for Chris Anstey and the family?
I don't know. I've learnt the term portfolio career recently. So I still do ambassadorial roles. I still speak a lot. I still coach. There's a little bit of media in there with the growth or the popularity of basketball increasing again. And I'm about to publish my first book. So a little bit of everything. But as much as anything, you know, I'll be in Melbourne for a long time. I'm always looking for something new something new and exciting to try. And I also understand that not everything lasts forever. So understand that whatever I think I might be doing in 5 years' time may or may not be right. But, you know, again, I learned a long time ago that it's not always what you do, it's who you do it with. So I'm pretty comfortable with who I'm going to do things with. And if it fails, that's fine, because I'll fail with the right people. No, I've got some good people around me, and I'll figure it out over the years, but I'm very, very happy where I am right now.
Well, I might even get you involved if you're willing. We have a wonderful program called J-Man Active, which what we're trying to do and which what we are doing is to get our participants involved in actual physical activity. If you can get the body fit, there's a big chance the mind might follow. So you'd be a perfect guy to be part of our basketball campaign.
We'll do it sometime soon.
Good on you, Chris. Great to catch up. It's been way too long. Let's do it again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Coach. Talk to you soon.
Gee, really enjoyed that conversation with Chris Anstey. His book is called Tall Tales, What the Whiteboard Never Taught Me. Should be out this year sometime. What a great bloke. Now, speaking of great people, next episode of the J-Pod, I'm going to have a conversation with a friend of mine who I work with at two different radio stations, and in fact sat in a studio with her on the half hour between 6 and 9 a.m. Monday to Friday for close on 10 years. So we got to know each other pretty well. To say that she's pushed through the glass ceiling would be an understatement, more like smashed a few at a time. And she's doing so at the moment in what has been a bastion of male domination, Melbourne radio station 3AW. Diane Dunleavy, or as she is known as DD, will be my special guest on the J-Pod in episode 4. We talk about many things, but one that does stick out was the influence her mum had on her in learning about and accepting disability and not to be afraid of it.
I remember mum one day, as she was minding one of the little boys from Biala, Mikey was his name, and she wheeled him up. I was at a fair of some sort, and mum wheeled Mikey up, and she's just talking quite normally like anyone else. People were all stopping and looking at Mikey because he had some sort of a problem with his skull, like a large section of his skull down the middle was missing. So his face did not look like the average human face. People were stopping and looking at him, but mum just didn't see it. She just had brought Mikey to the fair and everything was normal and let's get on with it. That was what she had, and bless her, that's what I've got from her.
DD from 3AW. You can hear the full chat next episode, episode 4 of the J-Pod. But for now, stay well and remember, everyone has a story. Coach out.
You've been listening to the J-Pod. Thanks to J-Man Active.
The experience with J-Man and my walking is we go out and about, enjoy some bite together and have a kick and have a laugh.
Oh, it's increased my life then incredibly, because it's increased my self-esteem and self-worth and has just made me feel so much better about myself and my illness.
If the body is active, the mind will follow. Call 1-800-JAEMAN.